So I said to Big Hair, why don't we take this supercars in review thing and go one more step and rate the drivers? To which he said, how? Well, here's how, Niv. It would be simple if we only have to measure one race, but we can't do that since most supercar weekends have more than one race. And this year, it's also been a battle of tyre life. So we have to look at the whole weekend as one picture, and that means one great race can be spoiled by poor effort in another. We also take into account the relative position of each team against the other. And that means that we're not saying Team Sydney is going to be Red Bull Racing Australia. So, how does it work? 10-point weekend would be perfect. Great racecraft, a sensational implementation of strategy, and scoring the best results possible for that car and that team. A 9 or 8's a very good weekend, barely putting a foot wrong on the way to good points haul, but little spots for improvement. 7 and 6 points is around a par score, we think, with a few mistakes dragging the score down. 5 and below, there's room for improvement. And that is how the Supercars in Review ratings works.
Welcome, listeners. This is the first episode of Supercars in Review Driver Ratings. I'm Neville Wilkinson, and I'm also joined by Andrew Clark, who's actually the brainchild of this little shindig, so to speak. How are you, Clarky?
Pretty good. I just thought it might be time to make a few enemies inside the circus, so I thought we'd come out and do some ratings and see what happens.
Now, do you need to fill the listeners into a little bit of what this is all about?
Well, firstly, it's I think you don't always get a true reflection of how good a driver is based on the points they get or the finishing order that they have in a race. So what we want to do is we want to break that down a little bit and say, well, what about if, you know, they had a certain car? So like you take, say, you know, like Alex Davison, I think, who's at the bottom of the championship order or right down the lowest part. You know, how would he go if he was driving the Scott McLaughlin Mustang? And so we're trying to do that. So we're trying to put the relativity into it. And then also to watch us. So over time, we're going to watch some of these young guys coming into the sport. Like let's take, you know, Jack Smith, who today might be only rating fours and fives as he learns his craft, but he might be doing, you know, nines and tens in 2 years' time. So, you know, we'll be able to watch the evolution of the drivers as well. It's really just trying to put some maths around it and, as I say, trying to earn me a few enemies.
Well, we'll start going through the point score in a moment, but I wanted to just let the listeners know that I will also grab you for a couple of minutes at the end for a bit of an update on what's going on with supercars in supercar land, because things are moving that quickly. But let the points tally begin. First, let's start with Team Sydney. And the first person up is Alex Davison. And you gave him a score of 6.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm pretty sure that that car is not very good. And I think that the team is really kind of working its way into the new setup in Sydney and trying to get on top of these things. So I think the car is just ordinary at best. So I think what they got was both of the two drivers, both Davison and Pither, extracted the best you could out of that car. They didn't seem to make many mistakes. You know, their qualifying was okay. And that's why Alex got a 6 and why Chris got a 7. So Chris's qualifying was just that little bit better than Alex's, which is why I've upped him a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. I would have thought that Alex might have got the same as his teammate, because his qualifying was down a bit, but he actually scored, was it?
It was only 4 points between the two of them in terms of the overall results for the weekend. But I just thought I saw a little bit more from Chris. You know, to make the shootout at any point in time is good and significant. And as I said, it's not a very good car. And that was the first race of the weekend. So getting into the shootout when everybody's on a level playing field, I thought was really good result.
Well, next we've got Matt Stone Racing and Zane Goddard. You've given him a rating of 5.
Yeah, again, a young guy learning, very much learning. So he's one of the ones I think it's going to be interesting to watch over time, and especially if he gets to run the next Sydney Motorsport Park. I think after the race he said that's the first time he's been there in 5 years in any form of racing at all. So, you know, coming from nowhere on that. So he's an evolving young driver. I thought there were some nice signs that came through, but, you know, he, as I say, he is learning and he'll grow and develop.
And his teammate, so to speak, Gary Jacobson, had a sterling weekend. You've given a rating of 7. Were you sure that was enough?
Yeah, absolutely, because we've had one really good race, which is the middle race of the weekend, and then the other two have been so-so. But, you know, we did see a really good qualifying effort. I mean, we had 7th in the race 11, which is the middle race. So 7, I think, is a pretty fair indication. But again, coming back, you know, he's a young driver growing in the series as well. So, you know, it's young in terms of supercar years.
Next on the list is Team 18, and let's start with Mark Winterbottom. What did you give him?
Well, I gave Frosty a 7. His performance this time around compared to the last Sydney Motorsport Park, I mean, he dropped 28 points in between race meetings. And it was a solid weekend, really, but, you know, it just didn't jump that much. What gave him the extra point over his teammate, which we'll get to in a second, is that his qualifying was really good. Like, he was 3rd on the qualifying averages across the 3 races. And we know from his heyday that he was the best qualifier in the game, you know, for many years. So good to see him dragging that single lap speed out of it. But Team 18, for me, it's the hardest team to sit back and say, where exactly are they in the series? And I think they're going to grow so much this year by having 2 cars. And, you know, if Frosty can turn 7s and 8s in, then they're going to get some good results.
His teammate, Scott Pye, you gave him a score of 6. Why? You said it was based on Scott's qualifying?
Yeah, that's the difference, I think. You know, so you Frosty averaged 7th on the grid in qualifying, whereas Scott averaged 12.7. So that's a big gap. And what you saw was that, you know, Scotty Pye had a really good 3rd race, but, you know, his 2nd race was a bit nondescript. So, yeah, just a little bit down. But that said, he was better than he was the previous race meeting.
Yeah, I do note that Scott Pye was one of the few drivers that scored more points at SMP2 than he did in SMP1, but Mark Winterbottom scored less points in SMP2 than he did in SMP1.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So, as you say, you know, it was Frosty did 190 in the first one and Scott Pye did 130. This time around it was 162 and 148. So, yeah, there was a bit of a drop-off from Frosty and a bit of a lift in Scott, which is exactly what you would expect. Scott Pye's in his first year with that team. He will grow, you know, he and the whole thing will develop.
Definitely one to keep an eye on. Okay, yeah. Next we've got Kelly Racing. And first up, Rick Kelly.
Yeah, well, Rick Kelly was the 3rd biggest gain in points from the 2 rounds. So he scored 28 more points than he had last time around. And I thought he was pretty good over the weekend. He was honest enough to admit on Saturday that the car was shocking. And that they went for a more...
Shocky. What do you mean, shocky?
I just didn't handle.
You know, or like, whoa, oh, that's a bit of a shock. Or, come on, these shock absorbers aren't quite right.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of everything, to tell you the truth. But so he and his teammate both acknowledged that the car wasn't that great on the Saturday. So they went for a very conservative strategy, and that left them in, you know, reasonably good shape on the Sunday to have a crack at things. And both of them put some good points up. Obviously, his teammate, if we touch on Andre now, he had that first ever pole position, which was, you know, which was really good to see in the 3rd race. And he outscored his teammate as well. So it was really good results for both of them. And as I say, they both increased their point score quite significantly over the last round.
Okay, you gave Andre 8, one more than Rick. Don't you reckon you should have scored a bit more? I can't believe that you only gave him one more point than Rick.
Yeah, but 34 points and 36 points in race 10, you know, so they were right down the back of the order, so there's not much between them there. And, yeah, Andre, I think 1 point for the pole position and 1 point for the better race result on the in race 12.
Okay.
Hard to go much higher than 8, I think, so the only way I can do that is to drop Rick more.
You could do something a bit more special. Next on the list, Walkinshaw and Jetty United. And up first is Chaz Mostert.
Yeah, well, Chaz dropped off from the last round and he was just, I don't know, he was just consistent. He wasn't spectacular. I thought the last round, Chaz was really, really good. He looked alive and into it and gave us something we hadn't seen from Walkinshaw United outside of the street tracks in quite a few years. But this time around, I thought he was just ticking along, I think. And maybe that is when you turn up at the track and the car's not as great as you think, but you change the way you're thinking about the weekend. because these race weekends are so fast. You know, it's a 2-day event and it's just bang, bang, bang. And so he got 7 out of me this time around, and he probably would have got 8 at the last one. So as I say, just a little bit of a drop off.
Well, Bryce, you gave him a 6.
Yeah, and again, he's a growing and a developing driver. It's his qualifying, I think, that let him down more than anything this weekend. I mean, he had an average of 16.3, and he qualified for the shootout again, which is what he did last time around. And his races were hampered because of that, because you're putting yourself down amongst the muck, and you know, you end up wearing your tyres and doing all those sort of things. So this sport, supercars, is very much about qualifying, and if you can't qualify, you're never going to be able to show what you can do in a race.
Well, Bryce out-qualified Chaz in the first race. Do you know what the tie setup was between the two of those guys for that first race?
Yeah, they were the same.
They were the same. Well, Bryce did pretty well. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, look at his other qualifyings. I mean, he's beaten him in one, and then you've got a difference of, you know, Chaz qualified 6th in race 11 and Bryce was 23rd. And then 16. Chaz was 8th in race 12 compared to 16. So, you know, the drop-off was quite significant. So the average, you know, Chaz was average of 9 for qualifying and the 9th best qualifier for the weekend, where Bryce was 16.3 and 16th for the weekend. That's where the points difference is.
Okay, moving on to Brad Jones Racing. And up first is Nick Percat.
Yes, the first of our 4 car teams, and the first one we talk about that had a race winner in it. So, Nick, I've given him 8 points. I thought he was solid, really solid again this weekend, but just a little bit off being that 9 or 10 pointer. And probably this time around, I mean, he dropped significantly in points from the last round, a 26-point drop, probably because his first race wasn't as good as we expected. But he qualified well. He was the second best qualifier for the weekend. And I think, you know, if I was giving half points, he probably would have been an 8.5 or an 8+, or whichever way you want to go. So perhaps a bit unlucky not to get the 9, but I think that the race under lights just hurt him a little bit.
He was the only one of the – he was one of only 3 drivers that actually scored into the 200s over the whole weekend. So that's a pretty good effort, I reckon.
It was a great effort. And what you've seen there is, like – we've seen Nick kind of floundering a little bit in teams and trying to find his feet. And clearly he's found his feet at the same time that Brad Jones Racing has. So I expect to see a lot more from Nick Percat over the next few rounds.
Okay, next, Todd Hazelwood.
Yeah, Todd's the interesting one here because we all thought he did really well last time around, but he got hurt when the car broke. So this time around he put it together in the right way. So his points was very similar, except for in the last round where he really outscored himself compared to last time. I've given him only 6 points, actually. I'll change that. We'll give him 7.
Well, there you go, folks. This is the first one. All right. That's fantastic. We know that.
I will go back to 6 because I don't like his qualifying. 15th, 24th and 12th. That's why I rated him down.
So still happening.
he's going to have to get that qualifying stuff, or the speed that we're seeing is not always going to give us the results.
So his score is because of his qualifying.
Yep.
Okay, moving on, Macaulay Jones.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with Macaulay. I think when you're going to run a soft strategy as you are in race one, you want a little bit better out of it, which is why I've only given him a 7. But I think it's the first time that I can remember seeing him out there racing and thinking, yeah, he should be here. And Brad, I know I did an interview with Brad last year and he said if he didn't think he was good enough, he would have booted him. So I think, yeah, Brad's saying he's there on merit, and I think we saw that this weekend. You know, he had a slight off in one of the races and a couple of other things, but for the first time I think we saw that he's actually, you know, got what it takes.
Well, the last
bad hairdo, though.
And Jack Smith rounds out the last of the 4 BJR cars. You giving him a 6.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good all weekend for a bloke who's really coming in and learning. So if we say, you know, where's his baseline? To me, his baseline is in the bottom 4 of the series at this stage of his career. But he was, you know, well out of the bottom 4 for most of the weekend. And you see he's 22 points up, so he's improved over the last one, which says I'm getting better and better. His qualifying needs to improve. And he did hit Jacobson during one of the races, so... that cost him a point probably. But, yeah, I was quite impressed. I think he like Macaulay Jones, yeah, their work's in progress.
Well, next up is Erebus Motorsport and Dave Reynolds. You've given him a 6 for the weekend.
Yeah, I thought he should have defended that podium position a little bit harder. I thought he could have been a little bit more aggressive than he was. He's picked up a fair swag of points. You know, 170 points is nothing to sneeze at. But we thought he was ordinary, you know, just okay in the last one, and he's got less points this time around. And we've got two ordinary qualifyings and one good qualifying. So I expect a lot more from Dave Reynolds. I think he's probably one of the three best drivers in the field, and I think we're just not seeing that from him at the moment.
Well, his teammate, Anton Di Pasquale, you've also given him six.
Yeah. Again, I think we should have seen a lot more from him in that first race when he went the soft strategy to really go out and win the thing. His qualifying in race one was okay, but his qualifying in the other two races was woeful, 22nd and 24th. You know, so overall, he was the 22nd best qualifier on the weekend out of 24. We know the kid's got truckloads of talent, but I just don't think we saw it on the weekend.
So you've given them both six for different reasons, yeah, but it tended to work out the same.
Yeah, and partially also because Erebus is a race-winning team, and I'm not seeing that we're going to get anywhere near a race win at the moment.
Okay, Dickford Racing. And that brings us to Cam Waters. What did you give Cam?
I was a little bit disappointed with Cam this weekend. And I think the last time around we saw that he's really stepped into that team leadership role at Tickford. But I thought he was a bit off the money at this time around. He did drop 22 points. He was fourth best in qualifying, which kind of props up the score a little bit. So I had him wavering between the 6 and the 7 points for the weekend, and I left him on 6 points just because the races it didn't give me much.
Well, next up is Lee Holdsworth, and you've given him only six.
Yeah, drop off again from last time around. Probably should have been able to stay in front of McLaughlin after the pit stop window, I think. And whether that's a reflection of the team not changing his tyres quickly enough or whether he didn't do a good enough in-lap, but I think with the strategy they were running, only changing two tyres on the right-hand side, I think he should have won that race. He should have been out in front and had track position to protect. And again, you know, Lee's a guy that I really like, but, yeah, you drop 36 points from one weekend to the next, and you burn all of your good tyres, six of your good tyres in the first race, you're going to be in trouble for the rest of the weekend. And we saw that even in qualifying, you know, the drop off from fifth in race one in the first race to 20 and 21. So, yeah, only 6 points for Lee this weekend. And it's a pity because those two cars, I think, are the best two looking cars in the field with their matte paint and the gloss paintwork.
What would you have given Lee if you had have got out in front of the guys?
Probably 7 or 8.
So that's costing possibly two. Okay.
Yeah, and I think looking at the times, it's his in-lap. I wasn't impressed with his in-lap, but, you know, I don't know. I'm not in the car. I don't know what the tyres are like, but his in-lap should have been a bit better, I think.
Well, it brings us to Jack LeBrock.
I thought Jack was really, really good on the weekend and great to see. Obviously, winning a race is significant, and the first race is significant at any point in time. But more importantly, he was 54 points better than he was in the first Eastern Creek race. So that's really good. So he clearly is the most improved driver in the field early in this season. And his qualifying was 18th, 12th and 7th. So he was getting better in the qualifying runs as well. Again, I don't know what tyres they had. Clearly he had a better set of tyres in the last race than other people. But you've still got to put it all together and you've still got to do it. And he did have to pass to take the race lead and he did have to work for it. And then when he was under pressure, he didn't make any mistakes.
Well, next on the list, James Courtney. You've given him 7.
Yeah, James was a funny one because I thought he had so much better weekend than he did last time around. And then I looked at the point score and he only picked up 6 more points. So it was strange. I thought he had a really good weekend, but on paper it didn't look as good, which is, you know, interesting. He did have a really good, solid race 11, but the car was clearly fading at the end. And again, qualifying's the issue. You can't do 17th, 15th and 18th and expect to do well in this series. But, you know, he did make up more spots than anybody else in the whole of the race.
Next up is Red Bull Racing. And let's delve into Jamie Whittaker.
Yeah. Well, this one was one where I was really tossing up because he was so close to getting a 6, but I gave him a 7. He dropped off of 94 from the last round, but the Red Bull Racing team was playing a points game. I think they realised when they turned up the car wasn't as great as they thought. And so they played a very stubborn points game. And it kind of worked in a way. I mean, you got 170 points, which is not to sneeze at. But, you know, it's Jamie Whittaker.
But hang on. He got 170 points That's a whopping 94 points less than the S&P one from a couple of weeks ago. I don't think their plans work.
No, I don't think it does. But overall, I was very disappointed with Red Bull Racing on the weekend. I thought they, for a team that likes to win races and for having drivers like Jamie Wincup and Shane Van Gisbergen who are race winners and want to win races, to play a game like that, I thought was just, you know, I didn't like it at all. I could have tempted them, give them both sixes just for that alone. But, you know, Jamie's qualifying was pretty good. I mean, we got 4th, 19th and 12th. The 19th wasn't so good, but the 4 and 12 are pretty good. 4 and 2 are pretty good.
Well, next up, Shane Van Gisbergen.
Yeah, he got more points than Jamie, but he got 38 points less than last time around. Again, playing for points, 22nd on the grid in race 3. Staggering, staggering grid slot for him. And that's why he gets only 7 points. Again, very tempted to give him 6 points, but yeah, I don't know.
We'll see if they continue their strategy the next round. And last but not least is EJR Team Penske. And first up, Scott McLaughlin. You've given him the first 9.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty good weekend. I mean, he was 58 points worse off than the last round. And he, you know, the race 1 and race 2 strategy really got the results. I mean, 2 podiums and a race win, or race win and a podium out of that. But his qualifying was what shone through. I mean, first and third on the grid for an average of 1.7 and a clear best qualify for the day. And it allows you to do all sorts of things. So the car was shocking at the start of race 3 because he started on soft tyres that had done at least 20 laps. So he really struggled early on. But because of the qualifying performance, he didn't suffer like other people did. And to top it all off, like, he didn't put a foot wrong in terms of his driving. The back of the car got staved in by somebody. But, you know, overall, I think Scott's clearly in form at the moment and a wave of success. It's going to be hard to see how he's going to drop off from where he is.
Well, that leads me on to Fabian Coulthard. And this is what I want to – you've given him a score of 8. I would have thought that he would have been at least the same score based on his performance on this round, considering his performance in SMP1. But you've given him 8. I'm a little surprised at that.
Yeah, but he's only got 200 points out of the weekend and he didn't win a race and his qualifying wasn't that crash hot. So he drove well and we saw what we need from Fabian Coulthard because he's not Scott McLaughlin and he's not going to be the dominant race winner that McLaughlin is, but he needs to perform better than he did last time around. So just because he was shocking last time doesn't mean that because he was where he should be this time warrants anything higher than an 8 to me. That said, yeah, it was 108 points more, which was pretty significant. And it was, you know, 64 points, 44, a lot of points difference in just one race by finishing the race. A good overall performance from him, consistent, but, you know, didn't blow my socks off, so an 8.
Well, I'm looking at his qualifying from in the last race. He qualified 13th. Scott qualified 3rd. Yet Fabian finished in front of Scott in the final race. So I thought that was a pretty good effort.
Was, but different tyre strategies. They'd run different tyres in the first race and a few other things. So, you know, as we spoke about in the review yesterday, this race weekend was very much about how you balanced your tyres out and how you treated them. And again, if you come back to it and you say, I'm on shocking tyres or I'm on really good tyres, how do I get the speed without damaging them? And that's what Scott does so much better than anybody else in the field at the moment, that he gets speed without killing his tyres, and that means that he gets the results over the 3 races that other people just aren't getting.
Well, that's our first, what would you call it, point score session? Okay, I wanted to also, before we sign off, grab you for a couple of more minutes and ask you about what's going on in Virtu, because the latest, obviously, it looks like all the teams have finally made it to Queensland.
The teams are up there now, all the Victorian teams, probably the Queensland teams are home as well.
And the Victorian teams.
Yeah, and the New South Wales ones. But clearly those who are on the move are the ones who are hampered here. I think we're quite clear about what my view on is this. What my views are on this is that it's not fair. You know, we're developing a different class of system. So, you know, the Victorian teams and the New South Wales teams who are going to be on the road for the next, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks are really going to do it tough. But that said, they're there. They're getting set up and they're doing things. It's just that, you know, people can't go home and see their family.
So the latest I've heard is that they're in Queensland. They're going to be there for a few weeks. Then they head off to Darwin, and there's going to be a double round in Darwin, consecutive weekends. And then they head to Townsville. Now, the latest what I'm hearing on the gossip is that they're trying to do a double round in Townsville as well.
Yep, and I'm very much in the belief of where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, we've heard for weeks the rumours of a doubleheader at Darwin. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see a doubleheader at Townsville as well. While you've got the cars out there, you may as well do it. It's just a pity we can't vary it in some other way. So hopefully they'll do a different race format for the second Townsville race if it happens, and then it won't just be the two 200-kilometre races. They might go to the three, and let's see what we do out of that one there. I don't think they'll change the first of the Townsville weekends, but I'm hoping that they change the second one.
Well, I like the fact that fans, they can get double the amount of fans there for Townsville. So there's double the opportunity. So I like that fact.
Yeah. I know if we were allowed to travel, it'd be a great week, great two weekends to go up there, catch supercars, go and do the Great Barrier Reef, come back for more supercars. It'd be perfect. But, you know, we're Victorians and we live in a leper colony.
Well, hopefully they can make it happen. And if it's true, look, fans, get online, express your support for this and let them know that you'd like to make that happen, and maybe they will make it happen. So. Yeah. But anyway, Clarky, last thing before we go.
Well, we're a modern social media outfit these days, Nev. So we've now got a Facebook page. It's called Supercars in Preview and Review, because they wouldn't let me do our very clever thing because it required brackets, and Facebook doesn't like brackets clearly. So jump on there, tell us what you think. Tell me if you think I got something wrong, if you think I'm a bit of a donkey. Otherwise, just heap praise upon me.
Oh, we'll ask some questions as well. We'd like to answer a few.
Yeah, well, happily. This the Facebook page is about the whole thing that we're doing here. So it's about the preview, the review, and the driver points. So, feel free to jump in there, communicate with us. Obviously, the way the world is today, we pre-record these, so you can't talk to us live, but you can certainly ask us questions. And certainly fire us some questions about Darwin and what you think about going on up there.
We'll also try and get a bit of a graph once this point score starts to take shape, and that should go up on the Facebook page as well.
Yeah, Will, and I will go back and rate the first two rounds as well, so that we've got those. Unfortunately, I'm not going to rate Melbourne because it was only the qualifying session, so there'll be no ratings for there, but I'll do Adelaide and I'll do the SMP1 so that we have a rolling point score.
Excellent. I'll look forward to that. Folks, thank you for listening. And from myself and Clarky, you have a good night.